Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 153 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include December 20th, that is the LA Championships at the Virgil Free Show. December 26th, Great Scott in Boston, and December 28th at Union Hall in Brooklyn, closing out the year as we usually do. Today's show was recorded at Union Hall back on October 25th, 2015. Featuring Sarah Benincasa, Mike Leibovitz, Emma Willman, and Kyle Ayers reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy.
Please give it going for your first round one competitor, Mr. Mike Leibovitz.
Here and you watch me. That's
okay,
how it works.
All right. Okay, hello.
Hi.
All right. Who fucked Roger Rabbit? I'll spare you the suspense. It was me. And I ain't talking patty cake neither. I'm Eddie Valiant, one time savior of Toontown, former gumshoe to the stars, and current sad sack drunk. I guess you can add rabbit fucker to that list of accomplishments, too, but if you want to keep that between us, well, that's okay with me, bub. How did I come to fuck the rabbit? And why? Well, it's hard to say. Was I confused? Emotionally vulnerable? At the curious end of a bottle of rye? Maybe so. But the main reason is that despite our ups and downs, that little furball is my friend. And when my friends come to me with a problem, it's my policy to help. It's an old-fashioned notion, I know. But it's how I was raised. Roger's problem was a giant engorged cartoon cock, if you want to get specific. The weasels were after that stiff rod and the precious, oozy, viscous spunk that was loaded up inside of it. We had to make sure they didn't get their greasy mitts on it, or grease their mitts up with it, for that matter. But we didn't have a lot of time, and in the heat of the moment, the only place we could think to hide it was in my mouth and butthole. If you're going to get technical, I didn't really fuck the rabbit, but he sure tore me up. And he taught me a thing or two about myself in the process. I'll tell you what happened. Try not to get too emotional. Try not to get too horny. You'd have done the same thing. That is if you ever had a real friend. It had been about a year since we defeated Judge Doom and saved Toontown from the Eraser. But Marvin Acme was dead, which meant that the Warner Brothers were running things now and not well. They devised an automated way to produce cartoons without the actors, and plans for the freeway were going ahead. Yeah, Dolores had left me for Angelo, though when they were on the rock, she would occasionally invite me over to bury my face between her thighs while she laid back, closed her eyes, and tried to imagine that I was my dead brother. Then she'd reciprocate with a rough tug job from those calloused working hands of hers while turning her head and trying to weep softly enough so that I wouldn't notice. Fucking is sad sometimes. My office was as dusty as ever, and I was still drunk. When I heard the knock on my door, it surprised me, mostly because I'd been shut up in my office for so long, I'd almost forgotten it had a door at all. It was Roger. I didn't do this to showcase my voice.
Please, Eddie. You gotta hide me. They're after me. It's springtime and I'm a rabbit. I'm as stiff as a board and I can't get it down.
It was true. Roger was wearing the trench coat he'd borrowed from me and never returned. He had his inky member tied up in the belt, a move that was fooling about as many people as a teenager tucking his boner up in his sweatpants. I was struck by the sheer size of the thing. Literally. It was sticking well out of the neck of his trench coat, and when he opened it up, it smacked me hard across the face. It was white and furry with a bright red tip, and it stung like a whip. I can honestly say that was the first time I'd ever been dick smacked by a toon. It would not be the last. As the trench coat came unfurled, it revealed the largest, most swollen testicles I've ever seen. They were each larger than the rest of Roger's scrawny frame, and as they were set free, they smacked the ground with such force that it propelled Roger into the air, and he bounced off the walls and ceiling of my office, his grotesquely swollen rabbit branch, knocking papers, weapons, sentimental photographs, and of course, empty booze bottles onto the floor. "Calm down, Roger," I said. "What the heck is going on?" "They're after my cum!" "Who's after your cum?" I asked. "The weasels! They know I'm hot, and they're after my sperm! They know that rabbit cum is a powerful thing! It's one of the most powerful things there is! Why, one drop of this stuff is enough to fuel their automatic cartoon machine for an entire year! If they get their hands on my seed, me, Jessica, Benny, all of us toons, we're all as good as dip!" Which is the stuff they kill toons with. Okay, all right, some of you guys haven't seen the movie in a while. "Come on, Roger, what do you want me to do about it? I gotta blow this load before they find me. You gotta fuck me, Eddie, it's the only way! Please, Eddie! You gotta suck and fuck my huge furry rodent dick!" I felt a pang of something in my chest, and I hoped it was heartburn, but I feared it was desire. "Let's get one thing straight, pal," I snarled. "I don't sleep with toons." Even as I said it, my voice wavered. For one thing, I wasn't 100% sure it was true. There had been a night way back when Betty Boop and I shut down that late-night speak over on Sunset. I don't remember exactly what happened, but when I woke up the next morning beneath some bushes on Mulholland Drive, my fingers, lips, and dick were black and white, and I had to wash with turpentine to get the color back. For another thing, I wasn't quite familiar with the feelings I was having. Did I sort of want to suck and fuck this rabbit? Had I always wanted to? Just then there was a knock on my door. I heard cackling.
"Open up in the name of the law!"
We heard some muttering and laughter out in the hall.
"There's no time," Roger pleaded as he sat down. "You gotta sit on this cock right now, Eddie!"
I was angry, confused. "All right," I hissed, "but not there. That's my brother's chair." Then I dropped my pants and sealed my nether lips snug around his vermin dick and drank him deep into my brown mouth. I was afraid it would hurt, but it didn't. The only way I could describe it is the feeling of Roger's obscenely oversized animated cock filling me up is that it was like the biggest shit I've ever taken, but in reverse. And a little bigger. Roger cooed with pleasure as he counted out his thrusts. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, as I bounced up and down on those trampoline balls of his with my man-gape full for the first time. I felt a lightness I'd never known before. You never realize how empty you've been till you're full for the first time. The weasels knocked again. "Come on, Valiant, we just want the rabbit. We got a reliable tip-off. He was here, and it was corrugated by several letters. Let us in, or we'll make like the wolf and blow this door down." More laughter.
"Faster, deeper," pleaded Roger. "I need to blow this load right now."
"All right, maybe I can suck you down," I said, and immediately got on my knees and took Roger's full sex down my throat. I could see the tip of him poking around and misshaping the flesh of my abdomen from the inside. And again, the fullness sparked an even greater cock hunger within me. There was gunfire, and the weasels blew the door apart and strode in, cackling in their zoot suits. They grabbed Roger. As they slid him out of me, I felt the most pleasurable gagging sensation I've ever known. One of the weasels flipped open a switchblade and held it to Roger's balls, while another held a bucket beneath those giant physiospheres.
"Are you ready to open up?"
one of them asked. They laughed.
"This is nuts!"
cried another. More laughter. Well, you know, they're weasels. "Hey, fellas," I said, naked and panting. I poured a shot from my last unbroken liquor bottle. "Before you cut a guy open, don't you think he at least deserves a last request?"
A cod piece would be nice, said Roger.
I think you, my friend, need a drink.
I don't see any harm, said the head weasel. Oh, I'm trying to cut back, Roger said stupidly.
Drink the drink, I yelled.
I don't want to drink the drink. Yes, you do. No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You do.
I don't.
You do.
I don't.
You don't.
I do.
You don't.
I do.
You don't.
Listen, Eddie, when I say I want a drink, it means I want a drink.
Roger said, grabbing it from my hand. I shrugged.
Tunes. Gets them every time.
You heard the man, I said, climbing under my desk. Roger took the drink and it hit him like 1,000 shots of adrenaline. He foamed at the mouth. He gurgled. His eyes turned red, then green, then blue, then red again. He shot up into the air and let out a sound like a steam locomotive. Then he spun around like a propeller and his still swollen cock took out everything in its path. He became a blur, and when the smoke cleared and he landed lightly on his feet with a sigh, all my furniture was reduced to sawdust, and the weasels were shredded and splattered and nowhere to be seen.
Thanks, said Roger. I needed that.
Calmly, he started walking out the door. Are you really going to walk outside with that huge erection? I asked, feeling my ass hunger return.
Oh, said Roger, looking down. He gave his boner a single tap, which reverberated down its entire length, making a boing sound.
And then his cock erupted like Mount Vesuvius, covering my walls and ceiling and entombing the debris on my floor like it was Pompeii.
Ah, said Roger.
I stood there, ankle deep in gooey rabbit jizz, feeling its raw power, dumbfounded, stupefied, incredulous.
Do you mean to tell me you could have blown that load at any time, I yelled?
Oh, no, not at any time, said Roger sincerely. Only when it was funny. That's it. Thank you.
I knew it is.
That's right. Ass hunger.
Give it over, Anna Willman.
Thank you guys so much. Okay, I'm excited to share this with you guys. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever written, and like I got into entertainment because I was trying to ghostwrite rap lyrics for Bobby Brown. Yeah, so, and I, like, as I was writing this, I, like, got deja vu for, like, how weird some of that was, and I was like, this is definitely weirder. But here we go. Okay, it's 2012, Boston, and Mitt Romney is drunk and disheveled. I know. After losing the election, his ego is hurt, but the only thing he is really scared about is his master Anne, his wife. He knows she'll be turned on from watching him admit defeat. She likes watching him squirm around like a little schoolgirl, and he'll do anything to be a good boy for her. Can anyone actually see this playing out? Yes, me too. Their whole relationship is fueled by kink and her gender queerness. His deep-rooted desire to be a faggy little boy toy for her has fueled everything he does. Trying to hold it together for the final round of press, Romney hardly notices the most random person ever to be at a Republican press junket. But she only has eyes for him. Panting in the back, seeing him, Amber Rose is in town promoting for her then fiance's. Also, these are all accurate. I did the timelines, right? Thank you. Yeah. Amber Rose is in town promoting for her then fiance Wiz Khalifa's new album and slowly putting things in place for her own short lived music career that never actually involved her doing any music. She can't explain why she's there, but she knows it physically. She relates to Mitt, his faltering career, and his incredible jaw. Not knowing... great jaw. Not knowing that in reality... she wants Mitt to fuck her, but not knowing in reality that Mitt is a super submissive bottom. She wants him to hate fuck her harder than he hate fucked up Massachusetts for the middle class. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, she imagines he'll just be like super meat and potatoes, and she wants to experience that. She wants Romney to fill her up. Little does she know, in the freaky world of Mitt and Ann, the only thing related to meat and potatoes are sometimes Ann has him dress up like a potato and suck off her and all her genderqueer friends while they eat pork chops. And then tie him up, bent over, and take turns fucking his ass while forcing him to watch videos of Michael Dukakis. I don't even remember writing that. I did this on the plane. I did this, yeah. All right. Lost in thought, Rose shimmies through the guards and grabs Romney's wrist. Before the guards can remove her, she whispers, "I voted for you. And I hate you." She grabs his wrist not to show dominance, but merely to get his attention. But Romney is such a slut. Being grabbed in any capacity makes him want to bend over forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. He turns to her just as Anne enters the room. Anne is startled. What is a person of color doing here? She wonders, is that Kanye's ex or Kalika's ex? This is before I did the timeline, sorry. Usually the only races in a press junket for Mitt are white, white, and off-white, because that one aide has rosacea. Anne is packing, and Romney knows it. She makes her way over to Romney, and he swats Amorosa's hand away. She whispers to him, "I'll service you while your security waits outside." This is Amorosa's whispering. "I'll service you while your security waits outside, and take care of them too," she whispers. Mitt's cocks get hard, picturing her fuck him and then bend over his security guards, though that is not at all what Amber Rose has in mind. There's been a miscommunication. They're both bottoms, but because of this weird interaction, it hasn't been communicated yet. As this happened, Anne waddles over like every rugby player rolled into one person. Wrapping up the interviews, Mitt asks Anne if Amber Rose can fuck him. Placing her hand on his collarbone, looking soft like a good Mormon wife to outsiders, but with her grip firm, letting him know that he's her little bitch, and she could make him get on his knees at any moment, she says, "Put your pink thong on and she can have her way with you." Mitt slips into the back. He needs this. He needs to get the pain fucked away from losing the election. Did he really have a quote where he said, "Corporations are people too"? Who is he? Why did he run for governor? He really thought he could just get elected from white supremacy and an incredible jawline? What is a Mormon, really? Because the booze was in his system, he was slow to feel out Amber Rose's kink. She was gorgeous, but he didn't really care. He approached her, and before he could say anything, he just wanted it so bad for her to take control of him, and she was thinking the same for him. He lay himself across her lap and arched up his back, ready for her to spank him. "Oh, shit, you're totally a bottom, aren't you?" Amber Rose says. Fuck, reality hit and he sobered up immediately. This was worse than losing the election. He just displayed his submissive man-whoreness to a total stranger who absolutely probably had a few tramp stamps all over her soul. I actually really like Amber Rose, so please don't take any of this like mean to her. Before he could get kicked out for being in the back, I obviously don't know how press junkets work, that I'm thinking he'd get kicked out for being in the back. Before he get kicked out for being in the back with Amber Rose too long. Time's up. Before he get kicked out for being in the back with Amber Rose too long, Anne barged in. "You dumb little bitch. I know she wasn't going to daddy you, you little whore. I just wanted to see how far you get." "Face down, ass up, the both of you." That's what Rose was waiting for. Exactly. bending over simultaneously and proceeded to dominate and fuck their brains out like the good little sluts that they are. And then she passed on some lyrics to Amber Rose and was like, hey, if you ever meet Kanye West, I wrote this song called Flashing Lights. Pass it on to him. Thank you so much for listening to that. I appreciate it.
Emma Willman, with probably our first Dukakis reference. It's about time. Give it over to Kyle Ayers.
Hello. Hi, everybody. In accidentally keeping with the theme tonight. mine is called Erection Coverage 2016. What if it like wasn't a sex point? I just like am super racist for Asian people. Never mind. People are like, oh, like that. Oh, never mind. Whoa. A cacophony of bullshit rings throughout the Arizona State University auditorium. Can everyone on stage please calm down? Please stop talking over each other. This debate is getting out of hand. Megyn Kelly speaks firmly, perched atop her moderator's booth, full grip around the long black shaft of her microphone. It's only February of 2016, 9 months before the election, but due to popular demand, candidates have gathered for a debate. The candidates for the debate were chosen via Twitter because we live in hell. On stage are Donald Trump, sporting his Make America Great Again cap and financial confidence that surely isn't overcompensating for anything. Next to Trump is Hillary Clinton, pantsuit. To Hillary's left is Bernie Sanders, with his look of, I just forgot my son had a science fair project due tomorrow, and now I have to make a ball hand. And finally, to the surprise of the polls, to Bernie's left is Carly Fiorina. You should vote on Twitter more if you don't want her to be there. Vote or die. She's bringing up the Republican rear. The candidate's quiet. Megyn Kelly. Okay, Carly, the next question's for you. Trump interrupts. Megyn, you're avoiding me? This isn't fair. You're being mean. Generally, women who are mean to me want me. Megyn takes a moment. She runs her fingers along her shoulder and down the nape of her neck, keeping a locked gaze with Trump. Her fingers run down her chest, tugging the low collar of her navy Sharia bony dress, exposing her milky cleavage tucked beneath a tight black lace bra. Carly Fiorina's bothered because she lost the attention from her question. She shouts, "We're digressing! Ask my question! I'm good with dealing with hard questions! Anything hard, I'm your candidate!" Trump shoots a glance towards Fiorina, who hikes up her ankle-length dress enough to expose her thigh, covered in dark silk stockings and garters. Trump steps back from his podium to let his erection pop up into his waistband. Fiorina slips her hand through the side of her panties. The other candidates are sort of just chilling right now. I totally forgot about them until right then in the story. I just had to write something in. Megyn Kelly, jealous of the attention Trump is showing Fiorina, jumps up. 20-minute recess. Candidates, go back to your prep rooms backstage. Trump and Fiorina escape backstage together with Kelly close behind. Hillary stands put, but glances over at Bernie and raises her eyebrows. Bernie takes a moment and approaches the front of the stage to address the crowd. Meanwhile, we're backstage. In a small classroom, Fiorina backs against the desk and pulls Trump in close. Trump puts his hands on the back of Fiorina's head and tugs her downward by her hair. And they say I'm not a candidate for women. Like, you couldn't picture him saying it? Why is it? Like, I'm coming out of left field with him behaving like this. Fiorina gets down on her knees. She unzips his pants and pulls them down, but they catch on his fully erect cock. She reaches her hand through the waistband of his tighty whities and grips his sweaty, bulging member. Trump brand slacks don't breathe. Donald mumbles to himself, Trump's tower. Fiorina wastes no time and begins sucking off Donald. She can sense him gripping the desk beneath him, and he starts to lean his head back before gripping his hair and facing forward again. Trump pre-cum dribbles out the side of Carly's mouth. She slurps it back up moments before it trickles onto the American flag pin on her lapel. Suddenly, Megyn Kelly bursts through the classroom door. She is visibly horny like a woman. It sounds stupid. I wanted to use a semicolon, and I'm the only one reading it. She rips her dress off from the top down, her tits exposed to Trump while Carly continues to blow him. Trump, you see how my competitors kneel before me? He gestures Kelly over. She's turned on by power, but Trump will also do. Kelly massages the back of Fiorina's bobbing head, and Trump pulls Kelly in, sliding his fingers down the front of her black lace thong. Kelly moans, wet. She lays on the desk, Trump fingers in and out of her pussy. After a few minutes, Kelly proclaims, "It's Megan's turn for Trump cock." She's had enough, let's switch. Megan always speaks about herself in third person. Then she says, "It's Megan's turn, keep it fair and balanced." Trump proclaims to himself, "I know what the women of America need, and what they need are my old dangly balls." He pulls his cock from Kelly's dripping pussy. "Pull out the troops and let them come home," Kelly says, gesturing to her chest. Fiorina grips Trump's member, aiming it at Megan's beckon. His cock came loose from her grip, and an unreasonably large load consisting of spurt after spurt of cock cream begins to pump out straight on her throat and chest. Hot spunk sprayed out of the skin of her shoulders. On it, not out of it. Who knows? They're all lizards. Fiorina is jealous. "I wanted cum on me." Trump, "I'm sorry I missed you. My cock actually leans slightly to the left." That's so funny. A moment passes and Donald's face reads that he's ready to go again. "Make Trump cum again." We're back in the auditorium. Screaming 20-somethings are hot and horny just thinking about all the likes they'll get for bringing up Bernie Sanders on Facebook. Bernie addresses the crowd. "Right now, Trump is backstage fucking the 1%. He doesn't care about the middle class getting the middle ass. I want to fuck everyone. I worry that the top 1% don't get the bottom 90%. What, Bernie can't get ass? Jesus. Hillary approaches Bernie, reaching around him and grabbing his cock through her through his pocket. "Hillary, I agree, and I'm ready to give some handouts." Bernie Sanders is getting about as horny as he can. And Hillary can feel his rock-soft boner. She gestures students on stage. Bernie turns to Hill Dog. "What about Bill?" They both laugh at that idea. Bill's not going to give a fuck. Oh, they're laughing. A dozen co-eds pin Bernie on his back. Hillary strips off her pantsuit, revealing another pantsuit below. She wets her fingers in her own mouth and slides them beneath her second pantsuit. Sanders is now fully naked, his clothes torn to shreds. Hillary moans. Watching Bernie get hard is getting her off. She wants the girls to fuck Bernie. Hard. "I don't support the Keystone Pipeline, but I do support you laying pipe right now, Bernie." A woman mounts Bernie. This reminds him of Woodstock. "You're clean, right?" the girl inquires. "You're clean?" Bernie reaches around her and grips her tight ass. He thrusts upward. The girl yelps. "I can tell you this. You're gonna feel the burn tomorrow." Thank you.
Kyle Ayers. For the record,
record, sometimes when you troll Megyn Kelly on Twitter, she replies. Do whatever you want with that information. Maybe all of us tell her tonight when we leave this bar that she spells her name wrong. Maybe we all do that. I'm just suggesting it. M-E-G-Y-N, go fuck yourself. Give it up for your final round one competitor, Sarah Benincasa.
My mom said I should bring cookies. It's my birthday, so here... Newly elected Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. All right, here we go. When the knock at the door came at 2 a.m., Ottawa time, he awoke with a start. Right away, he realized he was already hard. Monsieur Trudeau, came the voice. Oui, c'est moi, said Justin Trudeau. Is this my personal bodyguard from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or Mounties, if you will? Oui, monsieur, came the voice again. It is I, your faithful servant, Hecubus Le Monty. Justin Trudeau asked, is it serious? Oui, said Hecubus Le Monty. It's very serious. The magenta phone. It is the President of the United States of America. Sacre bleu! Exclaimed Justin's beautiful and accomplished wife, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, waking up. Is there an attack? I cannot say, Hecubus the Mountie said. Monsieur Trudeau, come quickly. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau rose, throwing on a robe, but not before Sophie noticed his boner. Mon Dieu, I am but a simple Quebecois girl slash television personality slash yoga instructor, that's true, slash body image activist, also true. I have no time for this madness. I remove myself from the narrative. Musical theater fags. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau rushed down the hall with Hecubus to his prime minister headquarters, the trapezoid cubicle. It was just a cubicle in the shape of a trapezoid inside a combination Tim Hortons Pizza Pizza. But no one was at the Tim Hortons or Pizza Pizza at the moment. As soon as Hecubus left, Justin was alone. Alone with the most important phone in Canada, the magenta phone. The phone that only rang for one terrible reason. Hands in hand, shaking, Justin picked up the phone. Hello? He asked, trembling. Is this Mr. President? It's Madam President, President Hillary Clinton sighed. Jesus Christ, Trudeau, it's October 25th, 2017. It's been 9 months since I was sworn in. Do we have to go through this every time? Sorry, Madam President, Justin apologized. I'm just nervous because I'm so hard. I don't know what you're talking about, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said, as his giant Disney prince cock strained against his Canadian-made boxers, which had washing instructions printed in both English and French, as was the law. Oh, don't you? President Hillary Clinton asked. Or have you forgotten so quickly how hard you came the last time I had you in a room at the UN, 5 minutes before your address to the General Assembly? What did I make you dress up as that time, Prime Minister? Anne of Green Gables, she said reluctantly. You said I was Anne Shirley and you were Diana Barry and we were bosom friends drinking your adoptive mother Marilla's cherry cordial. Don't make me say it again! Thing is, Trudeau, it's never been hard to get you hard. You've been into me since you were a boy, and your father, the late, great, former longtime Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, took you to dinner with me and my husband, former President William Jefferson Clinton, on a state visit to Toronto. It's Toronto, Justin said. It's whatever America says it is! President Hillary Clinton sneered. Look, Trudeau, you knew the score when you took this job. Every Canadian prime minister willingly agrees to be the sex slave of every sitting American president. It's how the system works. After the prime minister's turn is up, he or she may terminate the relationship, although it's not required. God knows Brian Mulroney went on sucking Reagan's dick for years after they were both out of office. Anyway, them's the breaks. If you didn't want this, you should have allowed Stephen Harper to stay in power. Then he'd be eating me out at Niagara Falls every 6 weeks. Besides, you like it. You love it. You were so happy when I beat the Republican nominee. Not because you wouldn't have done your duty and eaten Donald Trump's orange asshole. But because you've been into me for years. Okay, fine, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau yelled, slamming his fist down on the secondhand IKEA desk that had been an inauguration gift from whoever runs Sweden. Fine! I'm into you, Hillary Clinton! I'm into your beauty, your intellect, your power, your grace, your strength under adversity, your pantsuit. And yeah, maybe sometimes I replay all 11 hours of the Benghazi hearings when Sophie's away at a yoga conference. And I stroke myself until I shoot ropes of maple syrup into the air. And if anybody knocks, I quickly turn the channel to Degrassi. Not new Degrassi, old Degrassi. The episode where Spike finds out she's pregnant. No? Okay. And I pretend I'm very concerned with teen pregnancy, and that's why I'm watching it. But goddamn it, Hillary Clinton, I am the Prime Minister of Canada. I have a job to do. Yeah, you do, said President Hillary Clinton. Now do what you do, what they all do, what your father did, what Mulroney did, and Clinton, and Harper, and whoever the fuck else has ruled your weird-ass French beaver trap of a nation. That is still part of the British Empire. You're loyal to the Queen? How fucking funny is that? Like it's Game of Thrones or like fucking Wolf Hall or fucking whatever Disney movie your jawline marched out of. Now do it, Trudeau. Do your duty. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau sighed. He opened the drawer on his secondhand IKEA desk and withdrew it. Do you have it? President Hillary Clinton asked. Do you have? Yes, Justin said. I have the poutine. This is the first time I've read it through, and even I feel bad. The same plate of poutine every Canadian prime minister has fucked since. Since, like, whenever our version of George Washington was, or whatever. Was that before 1776? No way, it was totally way after. I mean, I've seen Hamilton, and maybe Canada was French then? Who fucking knows? Fuck it, said President Hillary Clinton. Fuck the poutine. And as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau fucked like 200 or whatever years worth of Canadians, Prime Minister dried cum, and like, I think there was a lady, so maybe some of her snatch juice, I don't know. Maybe there's like a few ladies. He stared into the middle distance and whispered, God save the Queen. Thank you.
Sarah Mombasa, you stay right here. Yeah, leave everybody from round one back to the stage. Round one. So, you guys are going to be voting on a winner momentarily. First, I'm just going to remind you of what everybody read. We started with Mike Leibovitz with Roger Rabbit, then Emma Willman with Romney and Amber Rose, Kyle Ayers with the 2016 debate, and Sarah Benincasa with Trudeau and Hillary Clinton. So, pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Mike Leibovitz, Roger Rabbit. Emma Willman, Romney, Amber Rose. Kyle Ayers, 2016 debate. And Sarah Benincasa, Trudeau, and Hillary Clinton.
as of round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 154 next week. And if you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. For details on upcoming shows, please follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.